Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio, you can always download the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you. It is a Thursday. You know what that means? It is a trivia night coming out to Dan McGinnis in South Haven. Play some trivia with me. If you guys paid attention this morning, you'll already have some of the answers.
Remind everyone where Dan McGinnis is located in South Haven.
Dan McGinnis on Goodman Road and Malone.
Okay, so go on out and see George tonight. Again, if you listen to Writer Than Write Trivia, you can always hear one of the questions that will be asked at a Cerrito Entertainment trivia event happening on Thursday. My company, as he is each and every Thursday on the program, he writes about college football, college basketball, and more for CBS Sports, including the NBA draft. He's about to give us some franchise grades. We got that to look forward to in the next 24 hours. Follow him on Twitter on X at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Great day, sir. This time last year, I was an unhappy watcher of the Grizzlies, thinking that they should not have taken Zach Edey where they did. But today, I am a happy watcher of the Grizzlies, knowing that they took exactly who I had them mocked to take. Granted, they had to give up a first-round pick and move up to do it, but Grizzlies end up with Cedric Coward. I'm pretty stoked about that. And I love that Bucky's hat you're wearing, man. That's really nice.
Yeah, I'm a believer in the product.
There's a better than zero chance I'm eating a Bucky's brisket sandwich for dinner tonight because I got to drive to Knoxville after we get off the air. And there's that Bucky's in Crossville, and it might be calling my name.
It's always right before. Like, whenever I have to drive to cover games in Chattanooga, it's on the Knoxville side of where I exit. And so I always get very excited to see the Bucky's billboard. I'm like, ooh. And then I realize I'm not going to drive by it. It's one of those places that, you know how sometimes things can get hyped up to you? Like, I feel like it happens with like movies or music. There's somebody that you really respect their opinion, but then it just starts getting overhyped and overhyped and overhyped. Maybe there's a parallel here with Cedric Coward that we'll talk about in just a moment. But I mean, listen, Jeff did read me today a profile that said Kobe, MJ, and Cade Cunningham.
So we can slow down on that.
So I'm just saying, like, we'll tap the brakes. But I always, like, you know, everyone always pumps up the bathrooms at Bucky's. And I don't know if this is your experience. The bathrooms are clearly very nice. But I've been to other big-time truck stops that have nice bathrooms. It's not exclusive to Bucky's. They are fabulous. I was more blown away, having been the son of a retail salesman, their merchandising. The fact that there's not an item out of place, like the amount of items and everything, it blows me away. The entire operation blows me away.
Like, when my journalism career comes to an end, like, find me at a Bucky's. They start out at like $20 an hour, you know, not bad.
I mean, I might get a raise if I'd go and work at a certain Bucky's. Like, that's entirely
possible. There's a couple coming.
So we got the West Memphis one. I mean, listen, hey, nothing in media is guaranteed. I mean, my wife already asked me, what's my fallback plan? I didn't have a great answer. Maybe I should have.
It's you, honey.
I was like, well, hopefully you keep rising that career ladder. Sweetie, I don't know if you know this, but right now, females in the workplace, they can move up quick.
You're empowered.
They can move up quite quickly, and you are a competent female in the workplace, so you can move up extremely quickly. So let's just go ahead and focus on you. Let's take that offensive energy and let's play a little defense here. Let's think about that. But yeah, maybe I should
relatable.
Maybe I should have thought about Bucky. So of course we've got the NBA draft, lots to get to, but I think let's focus mainly on the Grizzlies, and let's focus on Cedric Coward. Eric's going to join us here in about 30 minutes or so. We'll get his thoughts on the draft. We'll get into the list. Hugh Freeze is under fire for, of all things, playing too much golf. They could have come to me about 10 years ago, and I could have let you know that was going to be an issue, but now it's coming under fire. It's getting written about. I wanted to discuss that with Cobb. Also, there's a story about the way that Florida State is issuing and handing out their revenue sharing contracts that apparently is driving agents insane. So wanted to get Cobb's thoughts because that's over at CBSSports.com. Jason Smith will join us during hour number two. We'll find out how he has dealt with it because Jason's stance was he wanted the Grizzlies to get older. And I think it was a defensible position. I think you've probably seen the difficulties with that, but we'll talk about it with him during hour number two. We'll tell your story and then we'll get out of here. But I guess last night, when did Shams drop the tweet? Was it during pick 10 or was it right after?
Yeah, I think it was, the pick number 10 was in and we knew who it was because I don't know how you followed the draft last night, but it was a little bit different because in the past we always had Woj letting us know a solid 2-3 minutes ahead of time who the pick was going to be in his own little weird language. Well, now that Woj is no longer in the game, Shams is apparently a company man. He's not breaking any of these picks. So, like, Jeff Goodman was breaking a lot of it. And then there were a couple where I didn't actually even know until they said it on ESPN, which we can get into that, but that was kind of a rough
broadcast. We will get into the broadcast. I watched it like a normie, mainly on TV. I do have Shams notifications set up on my phone. I do also think it's not just Shams being a company man. I think the fact that there's no Woj threat that Shams was more willing to do it. Cause I think if there were a Shams equivalent, not no offense to Jeff Goodman, but like they're not in the same space. You know what I mean? Jeff is
right.
Jeff Field of 68 is primarily a college guy. But if there were someone at Yahoo that had the gravitas, I would be curious to know if he would stay a company man. But because I feel like there wasn't a Woj versus Shams thing, it was largely watching on television. As mentioned, we'll get into the broadcast. It got so bad last night that my wife came up and I moved it to TV2 after because it was after the Grizzlies had picked, and I didn't really think they were going to move back in. So I was like, I'll follow along on the screen. But we watched two episodes of The Bear.
Oh, nice. So, I know you've also been getting big into the Cardinals this week.
Big into the Cardinals, although it's back in jeopardy. They got smoked last night, and they're down right now.
Yeah, well.
I needed
you know, they're still, what, 10 games above 500? Not bad.
Yeah.
What we expected.
It's not real. I told Justin Moore last week, I miss when we had good players before we got caught for cheating with the computer scandal.
Yeah, I was actually there
this
summer.
That
was crazy.
I miss that. So, we'll see. Maybe they got to come back in them. So, last night, we get the report that the Grizzlies are trading with the Blazers, who are picking at 11. They give up a first, which is Orlando's first. The 2028 first that belongs to Orlando. So it's not
correct.
The swap. It's Orlando's 2028. 2 seconds that were never announced. We found out later they're not tonight's picks. So they're 2 future seconds. And 16, obviously. They swapped 11 and 16, and they tack on another first round.
Second-round picks are so useless and blah that really you could boil it down to basically they gave up what should be a late first-round pick in 2028 for the right to move up 5 spots in the draft.
Yeah, so I guess this was my reaction because after the pick happened, I kind of stayed off social media. And I then popped back on because my wife can't, like, if it gets to 10 p.m., my wife, she's going to bed. Like, she's going to fall asleep on the couch, get a crick in her neck. So she goes to bed. I pop back in, and I see a lot of people are complaining about the price. And honestly, it never really occurred to me because my old boss, Neil McCready, is very plugged into the Thunder, and he was insistent all week, the Thunder love Cedric, and it's not fake. And a lot of people had also believed that the Spurs also liked Coward a lot, and it was not fake. Now, you can always do the, is this smokescreen season? Is this posturing? I tend to believe that it was real, because if you think about Cedric Coward, he feels like a player that the Spurs and the Thunder would like. So, if you're behind both of them, it seems reasonable to me that you're going to have to sweeten the deal, and you're going to have to spend a first-round pick. Again, it's not a perfect science. Maybe we'll find out in 3 years that it was a mistake. But if you were power ranking last night, your four first-round picks, I think the fourth would have been the 2028 Orlando first-round pick.
Yeah, it should, they should be good then, because when Paolo gets healthy, you add Des Bain into the mix. You got Franz Wagner on contract there. Orlando is going to be a playoff team. So in 2028, that could be let's say the 23rd overall pick or something. I had no problem with the price. And the critical reception, I'm a little bit oblivious to what that is, you know, citywide right now. I don't know what's.
So I also wonder though, if it is the people that love to tell you how smart they are on Twitter, because today on Jeff's show, we ran a simple poll. And again, it's not science, but I thought it was telling. And maybe this shows a glimpse into fandom. But the poll was as simple as this. Do you like the Grizzlies' decision to trade up and take Cedric Coward? We now have 350 votes tallied. 90.8% said yes.
Oh, well, there you go. Then that's an overwhelmingly. You can't get 90% of sports fans to agree on anything. So it's. I mean, that's an overwhelmingly positive reception to the move. And I'm among that 90%. I thought it was a good move.
Yeah, because to your point, I really struggle with the people, and I understand maybe there's an element of this mindset involved. The Grizzlies have been pretty effective with some second round picks. But y'all, the league has very, very emphatically told us that second round picks are not that valuable. If you desperately want one, you can find one. Case in point, the Lakers have next to nothing to offer, and they bought their way into the second round tonight. So when people are trying to use second round picks as tacking on, like, I don't look at that. The day that they traded Jay Crowder for 5 second round picks, I was like, oh, those mean nothing. Like, that's just something to make the tweet look better.
Sure. It's like getting to the final stage of a home negotiation and then asking the seller to put on new doorknobs
or
something.
Yes. You can tell where Cobb's head's at. Fix the gate.
So my initial thought, because I was at first one of these, I don't even want to say at first, but this does go back to something I said with you on Tuesday when we were talking with Tim about this whole situation. My initial thought was, okay, that feels a little steep. However, we talked about this. What was one of the very big things that I said? Okay, if Kleiman identifies his guy, I have zero problem at almost any cost going and getting that guy. I can appreciate the level of aggressiveness because that shows conviction. That shows something that we as fans have been like, let's go. Like, let's actually have some sort of, feel for this.
I guess the point that I would make is your reaction to it, and I'm not saying you, in general, one's reaction to the price is based on expectations.
Sure.
I'm looking at it and saying, because my fear last night was they were going to not really be able to do anything. And then whoever you did decide that you wanted, I figured that we would realize like Cedric. And then it felt like everybody was in on Carter Williams. It felt like you were going to realize the Grizzlies are at 16, two of the names that you want. And then one was going to go to the Thunder. One was going to go to the Spurs. And and so to me, it's like, okay, I looked at who's directly in front of them. It's the Thunder and the Spurs. You know that everybody's basically eyeing one of the same guys. Mm-hmm. You were going to have to pay something to get in front of them.
Well, that draft started getting a little bit nasty after 15. So had the Grizzlies stuck at 16. You know who Portland took at 16? Jan Hansen, a guy who most people thought might go in the middle of the second round. And then you go after that, and it's like the French big man, Jon Berndt.
Hang on. Mark sent me.
I refuse to use Portland's Mark process on
Mark,
this.
Mark sent me this is Henry Abbott on Twitter. Doubt the Blazers smart front office thought Yang Hansen was the best available player. Team is for sale. First question I'd investigate. Might a prominent Chinese player help the team's sale price?
Oh, are we getting a little woke on this? Or are we getting a little...
I'm all for this. Bring it on.
I love it. But, I mean, at 16 and below, this thing started to get nasty. And, I mean, yeah, you got in front of San Antonio and you got in front of Oklahoma City. But I mean, they still came out pretty nice. I mean,
no, I will say Jeff nailed it on Twitter last night. Because I want to be clear, I was not poo pooing it. I was excited about the pick, but then when you see the Thunder and the Spurs do what they do, it just kind of like, I don't know, it's just a gut punch.
Yeah, so I mean, San Antonio got Carter Bryant, but I would much rather Memphis have Cedric Coward than Carter Bryant. I mean, they're comparable prospects, the 3-and-D wings with tremendous physical tools. Carter Bryant maybe has a, you know, you could argue he's got a longer, higher term, whatever upside, but he just played a fairly minimal role as a one-and-done freshman at Arizona. He's so much kind of earlier in his development. And then you look at Cedric Coward, he's going to be 22 as a rookie. He's got a lot of maturity. Some of those intangibles that the Grizzlies need. The Grizzlies don't need a 19-year-old project. They need a guy who can come in and be a low-cost role player for them during a championship window. So I'm so much happier that they ended up with a Cedric Coward as opposed to a Carter Bryant. I think Carter Bryant at 14 is phenomenal for San Antonio, but what's good for San Antonio isn't necessarily what's good for Memphis. And so Memphis got the player that it needed. Same archetype as Carter Bryant, but a much better fit, I think, in Memphis.
So this has nothing to do with basketball analysis. This is just having been on the planet for 37 years. You know what, honestly, my biggest hesitation is with Cedric? The poll answer that I just read, 90%, when everybody's on board. Like, there's kind of this might be the gambling brain, like when everyone says the same thing, and you're like, wait a minute. And honestly, the other big thing, and I don't actually know what the batting average is, Cedric Coward does feel very much like the Ringer's favorite player.
I don't have any problem with that. I don't have any problem with the fact that the Grizzlies are being lauded for this
now,
pick.
Now, I guess, honestly, though, I think about it in these terms. In the Brandon Clark draft, I think the fan base was pretty adamant. Like, I do. That's the first time I remember, like, kind of being, all right, maybe we got something with Kleiman. He kept falling, and everyone kind of liked him and talked themselves into him. But then everyone's like, I don't think they can really make this happen. And then they traded up to get him. And I think Brandon Clark is one of the most, like, universally, like, applauded draft picks from the fan base. And that's been a hit. There's the only real basketball analysis that I would have is, and it's not even a critique. It's more of, are we maybe we shouldn't be as certain as it feels like some people are. I am a little concerned that he blew up primarily at the combine and he wasn't cleared for the actual scrimmages. I am a little concerned that we only saw him play 6 games at Wazoo this year and level of competition. Like, his worst game was Iowa, and it's not like Iowa's known for shutting people down. But overall, I've decided that the way that I'm going to go about evaluating and analyzing teams to do is, what was your thought process? How did you execute it? To George's previous point, they identified that this was a guy that they want. They knew that other people were sniffing around. They executed it. They went and got him. And now the truth is, if he hits, he does change, like, the future of the franchise. Like, this isn't Joff changing it, but this becomes a different type of third piece that even Desmond couldn't have been. But he has to hit.
Yeah, he does. Okay, so let me put you at ease a little bit with some of the concerns that you laid out there. So first off, the fact that he wasn't medically cleared to play 5-on-5 at the combine, it's worth pointing out this shoulder injury is the non-shooting shoulder. That's a huge deal. The fact that we're not talking about his right shoulder here.
Yeah, for instance, Jaws labrum is his right labrum.
Yes. We're talking about his left shoulder. So in the long run, don't think it's going to impact his shooting ability a whole lot. Then, I mean, also, with Cedric Coward in particular, you've got a guy who I think is primed to exploit potential mismatches here. If you go and dive into the numbers at Eastern Washington, he got a lot of his points on post-ups. And at first glance, you're like, well, I mean, how is that really going to translate to the NBA when he's 6'6"? Well, I think, one, if you get onto a smaller guard, he can bully smaller guards. Because of that length, of that athleticism, And then also you get him switched onto a big. I think he has the explosiveness to blow by bigger defenders. So I think he's somebody who could exploit mismatches in a way that I definitely don't think Desmond Bane could. Now, is he as good of a pure shooter as Desmond Bane? No, he's not. But there's that. And then, I mean, I think the fact that he's 22 is actually a really good thing here because of everything you talk about, Jeffrey, about how in this era, it's not about amassing three superstars and then just filling them in with, you know, whatever UDFA scum you can find out there on the free agent market. You actually have to have effective, low-cost role players on team-friendly deals. And that's what Cedric Coward will be for the Grizzlies until age 25, 26. I'm not really all that concerned about the injury. I'm not really concerned about the age. In fact, I'll say this too. Last year, Cedric Coward was a part of the pre-draft process until he ultimately decided, you know what, I'm going to go play one more year of college ball. And I don't think he would have done that pre-NIL. I think the only reason
he didn't
come out last year was because, you know, all right, I'll follow my coach from Eastern Washington to Washington State. I'll probably make a nice six-figure NIL payday, and then I'll come out next year. Unfortunately, that injury, you know, sort of derailed his 1 year at a higher level of college ball. But what he showed at the combine wasn't necessarily even the skill and all those things that we did see in college basketball. It was the measurables, the upside, like the 7'2" wingspan, the ridiculously large hands, the interviewing skills. It was all the intangibles that sort of put him over the edge. It had nothing to do with the type of player that he is. We all already knew from last year that he was an NBA archetype. And now through this draft process, everybody got to know the type of guy that he was. And I think, you know, I think the Grizzlies made a really, really wise, smart, calculated decision here.
Yeah, I'm with you because also, like, if you compare him to Carter Bryant, I felt like a lot of people that liked Carter Bryant liked Cedric, but I liked Cedric more than I liked Carter. I don't know. I felt like at Arizona, there were so many times where, a lot of times in crunch time, they didn't really even, like, go to him or play him. But, like, it always felt like, to me, the college quarterback that, when it's like schemed up and it's right, it's good. But as soon as like the first read's taken away, it felt very clunky. And like, I didn't think he was a great ball handler. I didn't think he had like awesome instincts.
Bryant's super raw. Carter Bryant is super raw, but I think he's fine in San Antonio. I think they got a steal by getting him at 14.
This is not fair to Carter Bryant. And this is not trying to crap on San Antonio's. Every time I got whiffs of Jeff Green, it's just like, when you see Jeff Green walk off the bus, like prime Jeff Green, you're like, that is like maybe the greatest NBA looking player I've ever seen.
I think Jeff Green could be the doesn't quite pan out comp for Ace Bailey, actually.
And to be clear, I would love to have Jeff Green's not panning out. I mean, what? Yeah. He just played, what, year 18?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like a totally fine, like usable, you know, kind of high level rotation player.
He was just never what he was drafted to be. Let's see. So his first year was 07. Let's see. Right? Is that 19 years?
Man, what a journeyman. He
06, 07 or 07, 08?
07, 08. He played in Seattle.
Whew. Goodness. How many players left in the league can say that?
I think he's it.
That played for Seattle or played in Seattle?
Played for the Seattle Supersonics.
Oh, he might be it.
No, Durant.
KD.
Durant.
Yeah, I was going to say KD.
Right. 1 year. 1 year KD did.
Yeah, I think they're the last two.
I think those are the last two, yeah.
Because I'm looking up players that were on that team. Collison gone. Dupree done. Durant in the league. Something named Francisco Ellison. Mikhail Galebi. Jeff Green. Adrian Griffin.
Adrian
Griffin's already been fired as a coach.
And his son has already retired from the NBA.
Yeah. Petro, Luke Ridenhour.
He's probably 53 years old now.
Yeah, I do remember trying to not comb my hair for like a good solid like 4 months to see if I could get the mop like Ridenhour and Dan Dickow had. Remember when they had like that kind of like I've never combed my hair mop?
Yeah. I went for that for a while.
Yeah.
It's kind of still actually my go-to.
Yeah, I do. Thus was the Luke Ridenhour segment. So I think it's KD and Jeff Green.
Yeah, so for Ace Bailey, that's my like floor is Jeff Green. I think Ace Bailey's got a tremendous ceiling. He was one of the more fascinating parts of last night too.
I low-key kind of want some stock. I think the league did they did not appreciate how he operated. It kind of had whiffs of the Shador thing.
Yeah,
but he's better. Like if Shador were as good as Bailey is, Shador doesn't fall to the sixth round or fifth round, whatever it was. Like
he just made the process unnecessarily difficult on himself. He and his representation did, but at the end of the day, like he may not have ended up where he wanted to go, but he's a top five pick with a ton of talent, just a ton of talent, and was regarded as a better prospect than Dylan Harper going into last season. Dylan Harper had a really good year. Ace Bailey, I mean, it's more the intangibles that are keeping him from being drafted above Harper in the first place. So I think Ace Bailey, we could come out of this draft 5-6 years from now, look back and say, wow, I mean, outside of Cooper Flagg, probably. I mean, there's a chance Ace Bailey's the next best player in the NBA.
One of my buddies in the group chat already declared that Cedric will be the third best player in the draft.
There's a universe. Like that is also kind of the other thing. It's like, I don't know. Like, I feel pretty confident.
I think he's a dog, man. I think he's a dog. I've watched enough interviews with him and just sort of dug enough into his game to believe that, like, he's got kind of some of the old school grit and grind that's been missing a little bit and that you lost even more of when you traded Desmond Bane. I mean, I'm not criticizing the deal.
I think that's kind of what made you grit your teeth when it was. It's like, man, one of my biggest criticisms of this team is like, want to?
I think he's got it. And the thing I like about him is that, like, what stands out to me in his journey, it's the fact that he's this late blooming guy. He was not the factory produced kid built on the AAU assembly line. I mean, he took the long road.
He's got some Skeens in him. Now, granted, Skeens wound up at Air Force, but they were both kind of byproducts of they played on the West Coast during COVID.
Yep.
And they played at kind of high schools that weren't like known as you got to go see this guy. Neither was like all that active on the summer circuit where the high level, you know, where high level people go. And so like Skeens winds up at Air Force.
Yeah, it's an organic path.
Same thing. Cedric was like playing center in high school. Skeens was catching. Like
right. So that's what I'm talking about. Like his developmental arc is still early in that, and he showed. I mean, I buy what he did at Eastern Washington. Same way. Look, if you look at Jalen Williams, what he did at Santa Clara, and Brandon Pajimski, what he did at Santa Clara, and then I mean, I realize Eastern Washington in the Big Sky, it's a slightly less quality league than the WCC. Like you go and look at what he did.
You don't have to play Gonzaga, but that's about it.
Right, exactly. So
pretty comparable.
I'm a believer. He's great in transition. He's great at the rim. Great in the catch and shoot. I think Kleiman said this. You know, the multi positional defensive upside is so obvious and so evident. And it's the mentality and the path and the maturity. I think all those things are going to work in their favor. I mean, because you look at, like, he's kind of the opposite of a Gigi Jackson. And I don't mean that to disparage Gigi, but Gigi's super young, super raw. You know, he's a great personality, but not yet mature, you know? And Cedric is sort of the antithesis.
He's a great smile.
Right.
And he's also a sick drummer. I'll give him that as well. Right. All right, let's find out what Eric thought about everything. We'll discuss that with him. We'll also get into... Oh boy, that broadcast. We'll get into that during hour number two. Jason Smith as well. Stick around and listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He is Eric Hasseltine, kind enough to join us each and every Thursday. Eric, is Cedric Coward going to be more Kobe or more MJ?
Man, why you do that?
Because Jeff read to me... Jeff read to me a scouting report from today, and it comped him to Kobe, MJ, and then also some Cade Cunningham and SGA in there as well.
I'd take 10% of each of those guys and let the rookie develop. There you go.
I think
20%.
And again, I'm being somewhat facetious, but do you like the move? Because you know we've all, whenever a season ends, it's always going to be frustrating unless you're the Thunder right now. But I think Everybody kind of decided like we're out on youth. But I do find it interesting that amongst the fan base, this has been a very popular draft pick.
Yeah, I think, I don't know much about the young man other than his journey and that he played 8 games last year before an injury. But I knew they were looking at him. I had seen some reports on that. And I think they felt like they were going to be able to get him at 16 and then obviously felt like they weren't. So that was the guy they targeted. And I'm a big believer. And if you sit back and go, well, we didn't get our guy and we have these assets to maybe go get him, then you go get him. If you don't get them and you hold on to the assets and they don't turn into anything, then you just look back and you say, what if? So from what I see, he's got a long wingspan to play passing lanes. He's a good defender. He's a very good shooter. He's obviously not Desmond Bane, but very few are. But, you know, Dez wasn't Dez now when he first came in the league. He had to work on his consistency with his NBA three. So maybe it's not as strong an upper body, but maybe a little bit better defender and a capable 3-point shooter that gives you a little more prowess on the defensive end. He's young and, you know, he fills a need. He needed a wing and you went and got one. You gave up a 28 second or first round pick, but you don't know where Orlando's pick's going to be. What if they're really good in 2028 and it's in the top, you know, or it's in the bottom third of the draft? What if they're really bad? You could go that way too. So you got to figure that stuff out as you go along.
Yeah, Eric, I certainly had no problem with them parting with that 2028 first-round pick, particularly because Orlando should be pretty decent at that point. And so you have conviction on this guy. You just came into 4 first-round picks with the Desmond Bane trade. To me, it seemed like a relatively low price, because here's the thing that I think is unique about the Grizzlies in this draft. They're in a competitive window. And so for me, had they ended up with a Carter Bryant who's 19 and still very raw, that guy's got a long runway before he can be a rotation-level player for a playoff-contending team. I view Cedric Coward differently than most of the 3-and-D long-term upside prospects in this class, in that he could theoretically be somebody that helps a franchise like Memphis pretty early, a la Jalen Wells, who also came out of Washington State.
I think that's a great way to look at it. He's got to help. You know, he can come in and help hopefully right away. I think the interesting thing to me, and I don't know if they really ever targeted the young man. I wasn't in the room, but I thought, you know, Queen out of Maryland was an interesting option, because you've talked about needing size with the injury to Zach Edey. They obviously didn't feel the same. I was a little surprised that the Pelicans went and got him, because they just went and got Eve Meese last year. So they're going to double down with 2 bigs, probably splitting the 48 minutes, maybe even playing a few more and splitting it up with if Zion's healthy. So, again, if you're in a front office and you have strong convictions about a guy, that's the decisions you get paid to make. And I think one of the things the Thunder took a lot of heat for was years where they didn't make selections and they acquired picks instead. And it led to good things. But when they had convictions on a guy, they went and got him. And so you're not in a position where you're in a total rebuild. You know, the Thunder at that point were still kind of rebuilding and building it through the draft and building it organically. They had gotten Shea, obviously, in the trade. But you have your core of star talent with Ja and Jaren available, and you have guys that have been there, you know, coming back. And now you have to focus on what the rest of the offseason looks like. So we'll see what the young man can do in summer league. Everybody talks about what an amazing journey it is and how he goes from Division III to Washington State, and he's got all this tremendous upside. But, you know, by no stretch of the imagination did anyone ever say he doesn't have the drive to be great. He clearly does. To bring yourself up from that level, to bet on yourself at Division III to get to Division I, you know, that's not a journey that was very common back in the day. We're seeing it more now with the NIL and the transfer portal. But guys that start at that level, you know, I'm sure you guys understand it. You're basically playing in a high school type gym.
Well,
you're playing
I was thinking about
on
this.
A campus that nobody cares?
I was thinking about this. Who do you think the last NBA player that had to pay to go to college was?
I think it's Duncan Robinson.
I could buy that, yeah.
I think Duncan Robinson started either D2 or D3, but Derek White did as well at D2. Some D2 schools at that time were scholarship. You know, when I was at my D2 school, we were not. We were not. And guys have made that jump. You know, you talk about Zion Pullins made that jump from a smaller Division I at the time, UC Riverside, that used to be a D2. But guys making those leaps, usually it's from a smaller Division I, mid-major Division I to a high-level program. But Derek White and Duncan Robinson immediately come to mind for me. But those are great journeys, and those are great stories. But now, you know, again, I'm not thinking that he won't, but the onus is on the young man to come in, learn the NBA game. There's going to have to be some patience, because even going D3 to D1, he didn't play a whole lot of Division I basketball with Washington State. And let's remember, Washington State last year was not part of the Pac-12. You know, they weren't.
No, Eric, you know what they were playing basketball as?
An independent.
No, the WCC. They were independent in football or whatever, but they were playing the WCC in basketball.
So, yeah, but again, he still made the jump, but only 8 games. So it's going to be a big transition, but by all accounts, from what everybody says about the young man, he's ready for it. So you like your guy, you go get your guy, and these are the decisions you make, and I'm hoping it really works out for them. They've made a lot of really good choices. They've missed a couple times, just like every general manager has. No general manager is batting 1,000, fellas. We all know that.
Well, no, I mean, to you know, Presti, who's on top of the world, I mean, I'm not saying the guy's career's over with, but, like, everyone gives him credit for Jalen Williams. He took Usman Jang before him. You know?
Yeah.
And that's in the same draft. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about, because sometimes I like watching the draft and seeing kind of like, all right, what league-wide, what is happening? And you and I and Cobb, we talked about this. When you looked at the openings that we saw this year, a lot of teams, I think so far every team, because New York has not made a decision yet, but almost every team that had an opening filled it with somebody that either had a development background or had been a part of their program. And then you start to watch, it feels like everyone is doing the math of, okay, whether or not we want to, we're probably going to have a lot younger guys if we're going to have a couple of high-paid guys, because that's just the way that this basically everyone's agreeing. Sure. There's a hard cap now. Do you think that's a trend that's developing, or am I maybe just putting things together aren't quite there?
No, I think because you can't have 3 super max guys, even max level guys. If you put all your money into 3 guys and try to sprinkle, it's tough. And you know, the Thunder are going to have to face that decision eventually as well. Will Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren one day give them a discount for opportunities to win more titles? What will they do with a Cason Wallace? What will they do with a Lu Dort? They paid Isaiah Hartenstein. They had the flexibility. So you're going to have your guys, and you're going to have to get young guys in there that can come in and help you. And like you said, the Thunder took Usman Jang, yes, and he has not played a whole lot, and I think it's basically – they had 2 guys of very similar skill sets, and one turned out to be more ready than the other. That was Jalen Williams, and it's hard to get minutes around a guy that's an all-star. So you have to take those swings sometimes too, and just if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Now, they've got more assets to move forward. They've got some wiggle room. They've got some maneuverability. They have that pick swap. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination the cupboard's bare, and you know, but if you listen to last night's draft coverage, aside from all the talk about what an amazing moment for his family, and I get it, it's great, but like we doubled down on that last night more than once. But the other thing that you heard a lot of was like everybody saying, hey, this guy makes this team immediately better. This guy makes this team immediately better. They should be contending. They said that about every Western Conference team, it felt like. So you know how competitive it was last year, and teams are getting better. San Antonio is going to be a problem moving forward with the guys that they have, and we'll see what they do. Now that Durant's going to Houston, what do the Rockets look like, you know, without Dylan Brooks and without Jalen Green, but now with Kevin Durant, and they re-signed Fred VanVleet. You've got teams on the outside looking in, teams like Sacramento that are ready and poised to make a move as well. Dallas gets Cooper Flagg. You know, I'm not sure why everybody said, oh, now they're immediately back in contention. Well, I don't think Kyrie Irving's going to be ready for a while, fellas, so. And he's coming off a knee injury, and you've still got an Anthony Davis situation where he has a hard time staying healthy. But they got a great, obviously they got a top tier player, and Cooper Flagg appears to be everything as advertised. So the West last night, I thought, got a lot stronger all the way around.
It was fascinating is that two of the first three teams that picked last night are kind of in win now mode. I mean, obviously you bring up the concerns in Dallas with Kyrie Irving and his injury, and you know he certainly won't be available to start the season, but they you know, still have Anthony Davis and Klay Thompson. Now you're adding Cooper Flagg to that. I'm curious sort of, can you remember an instance in which, you know, we've had this both with Dallas and then with Philly at three? I mean, they've got Paul George and Joel Embiid under contract. Now you're adding a top three pick to the mix. Like, it's sort of an unusual situation to walk into as a rookie at that level of the draft, where normally you'd be on a 30-win team at most, played very few games on national TV, and have a lot of time to work out the kinks. But for both VJ Edgecombe and Cooper Flagg, oh, they're going to be in situations where a lot is expected of them pretty early.
See, and I think it's a little unfair to Edgecombe because he's going to be in a situation where you have wings. I mean, Jared McCain last year before he got hurt was one of the prime candidates for Rookie of the Year. And you have Tyrese Maxey, and you have Paul George, and you have, obviously, you have Joel Embiid.
Allegedly.
So I think it's a situation for Edgecombe where if they really are not trying to rush him along, there's no question the talent. If you watched him play at Baylor, and I'm sure you guys watched, well, I know you did, Cobb, and I know, Jeffrey, you did, and I did as well. And I was like, wow, this kid can go. Like, he is athletic, and his mentality of, you know, the story of coming from the Bahamas and the way he gave back and the type of personality speaks to me that he's going to try to do everything to be great. Now, will that come to fruition? Don't know, but I think that's a situation where he can have some growth at a slower rate maybe than a Cooper Flagg who's expected to come in right away, then even an Ace Bailey who goes to Utah didn't work out, they're going to expect results right away. And Ace Bailey, as Jay Billis pointed out last night a lot, was maybe the most talented guy left on the board after Dylan Harper and Cooper Flagg went, but and makes NBA-type shots. But you go to Utah where you didn't want to work out for everybody, now Ace Bailey's got to perform, and you got other guys coming out that – you know, that we're all a lot of flash and a lot of I can do this, and I hear that I'm going to remember every team that passed me over, and it's like, come on, dude. Like, who is the kid from Ohio State that's like, I'm marking down every team that didn't take me, and I'm going to keep track, and I'm going to do this? I'm like, bro, if you thought you were going ahead of Cooper Flagg number one, then you weren't paying attention all year, and there's nothing wrong with that. When you're a lottery pick, you're a lottery pick. You can play. There's no question about it. So I think a lot of teams got guys they wanted. I think at the end of the draft, you know, we'll see where Wolf went to Brooklyn, or Brooklyn. That was a good late first round pick. I'm trying to remember the kid, Liam McNeely from Utah. Yeah. That's a good late first round pick. I think he can play. Con Knupel, and who else got shipped to Charlotte that was also a shooter? And I was like, wow, that's two guys that kind of do the same thing.
Didn't Liam?
It's Knipple and McNeely.
Yeah, Liam was at 29,
that's a
right?
Haul for Charlotte because yeah. They were atrocious yeah. shooting the three last year, and they're losing Seth Curry.
I've got a take. I think because Charlotte, like under MJ, like they got this reputation of being horribly well run. If you've paid attention since they've had the new ownership, they've actually been doing stuff that makes sense. Like I think we kind of have to recalibrate on Charlotte. Like I don't think they're. I think we're too used to them doing the wrong thing that I think people have put them in the wrong tier in terms of management.
Hey, I love Brandon Miller, and his injury yeah. was a big loss for them. The book is still out on Tijan Salon, the rookie they had from last year, and they liked him in preseason. I thought he looked good at times, but at times he looked lost. He's very young. They're going with long, athletic wings at those two guys, and then they added two guys that can fill it up. You know, there's going to be questions on.
There's a weird mellow question.
Yeah, and that's it too. But like, yeah. You know, the people in Charlotte are seeing Con Knupel. That just rings of Adam Morrison back in the day when they could have taken Rudy Gay. And you know, I think Knupel's a good player. He's the best catch and shoot 3-point guy in the draft according to all the metrics. He's maybe not the best pure shooter, but they get another great shooter, and that's the way the league is going. You need shooting. You need guys that can stretch the floor. They obviously made the move to move Mark Williams, and you know, we'll see how that goes. It's man, there was a lot of shakeups last night. I'm going to be really interested to see what happens tonight because I think there's some guys in the second round that can make rosters and make an impact. We've seen that with the Grizzlies over the last couple of years. They are not the only team that's looking for that hidden gem. Tonight's going to be really interesting. It's going to go a little faster, and I think there's going to be a lot of trades. I think there's going to be a lot of teams go, well, we didn't get our guy, so let's move out and, you know, essentially sell the pick and trade it for cash considerations in a future second. So that will, to me, be the interesting thing. And then obviously we're a handful of days away from free agency beginning, and that's when sign and trades happen. So it's about to get crazy. I think Summer League's going to be a lot of fun to watch these young guys get out and perform. I think this is a strong draft. I do. I think there's a lot of players in here that maybe not everybody knows everything about. And, you know, like you look at, I don't know exactly how to pronounce his name, but the kid Toronto took, Maloch, out of Duke.
Maloch, is that Cobb?
Yeah, Maloch. He's not a guy that's going to spot up and knock down a 15-footer, but he can catch lobs and he can protect the rim and he can rebound. And you don't necessarily need him to be a 12-point guy, a 13, 14-point guy right away. It was like Zach Edey with the Grizzlies last year. Everybody's like, oh, that's such a reach at nine. It's like, it's really not if you break it down because you needed size. You have three guys that can put the ball in the bucket at last year's draft with Bane and Morant and Jaren. You need this guy to basically set monster screens, clean up some misses, dunk them back home, protect the rim, let Jaren extend to the perimeter. And you remember, as Jaren extended out to the perimeter in the first, you know, basically before the All-Star break, he was playing his best defense because Zach was back there helping. And so it's about fit. So it's not always about the top-tier best overall player at that spot. Once you get out of the top four or five, to me, it's about who fits what you need right now. And I thought a lot of teams drafted that way, and we'll see who got it right and who got it wrong as the season progresses.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the other story for me last night. And maybe there's confirmation bias because I kind of feel like the Thunder now, and the Spurs once upon a time were this, and I think maybe to a certain degree they still are, but it feels like the Thunder is the example. But I view it a lot like whenever I watch the Eagles draft somebody, I was like, well, that's probably going to be the right pick. And then when you see the Ravens, you always feel like, okay, well, that's probably going to be the right pick. It does kind of stink that, like, after everyone's pretty excited about making a pick that seems pretty popular, and again, to your point, who knows whether or not it's right or wrong, but at least it was something that got people excited. Like, I don't know, it just kind of sucks when you just watch the Thunder and the Spurs, and you're just reminded, like, not only do they have just this wealth of assets, but it's like, oh yeah, they're still well run.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the Grizzlies are well run.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. Like, it shows how hard it is, I think, the larger point.
I think you're right. And I think what, you know, for so many years, there were teams that had guys in their front office that had either played or had serious ties to the organization that had an idea of the way things should be done, and it didn't pan out. And you brought in guys that maybe didn't have the pedigree as a player or as a coach, but thought things through. And I think to me, and I'm not sitting here trying to be the company line guy, but Jeffrey, you and I have talked about this. The one thing I've always applauded Zach Kleiman for has been he knew to have other people around him to give him other perspectives. In the end, the decision is made and it falls on his shoulders. But he brought in Tayshaun Prince. He brought in an analytics guy in Rich Cho. He brought in other guys to look at the whole big picture. And again, nobody bats 1,000. You're going to take some swings at guys you think are going to be a good fit, and it doesn't work for whatever reason. Sometimes it's just a matter of the guy in front of you is just better, and he's going to play more minutes, and it's harder to develop in this league when you're not playing. I mean, think of how many guys played AAA shortstop for the Baltimore Orioles that were probably really, really good but never got a shot because Cal Ripken never took a day off. Like, what do you do with them?
And his dad was the manager.
Yeah, you might as well, like, just go, hey, look, we don't need to draft a shortstop for the next 15 years because that guy's got it locked down. And no matter if you get me, you know, the next A-Rod, he better learn either how to play third base or we better use him as trade bait.
Or learn the outfield, buddy.
Yeah, figure out, or if you can throw a knuckleball, become Tim Wakefield.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, and it's in every sport. I go, and you guys are college football guys too. When you see some schools sign like two top 10 quarterbacks, I think one team did that one year, I'm like, well, only one of them is going to be able to play. Like, are the other guy's going to be not happy he's sitting the bench, and is he going to be willing to put the work in to earn the time, or is he just going to sit there because they're the same class? He's probably leaving. And I also question the kid. I'm like, look, I love the fact that you're a competitor and think you can beat the guy out, but you have to put in play in your head. Maybe I don't, and then I've got to transfer anyway, so maybe I should go somewhere where they need me more so right away or in a year than this situation. And, you know, that's, again, it's the draft is never perfect. I mean, you can look at every professional sport and you hear guys, oh, this guy can't miss. I've seen guys on there. I remember being in a draft board, and I forgot. I think it was the year that the Grizzlies took Tony Roten Jr.
And
murder
there
were guys behind him. Yeah, murder T. Roten. And everybody was like, well, look, you're going to – this guy behind him and this guy behind him. And very few of them mentioned Draymond Green.